welcome to the Road to Genome podcast. I'm your host, Helen Bethel, genetic counsellor and workforce development and education lead for the Northeastern Yorkshire Genomic Medicine Service, or GMS. Today, I'm joined by Jack Darling, who also works for the GMS as assistant programme officer. Jack is also a patient who's been on his own genomics journey, which you can hear more about on our separate podcast episode. However, today we're going to turn the tables and Jack is going to interview me from the perspective of a patient about my experience as a genetic counsellor.
Thanks, Helen. So I think my first question would just to be, what is a genetic counsellor? You're waiting for a bus and someone sits down next to you and asks you what you do. What would you say to them is your job?
So there's lots of different definitions about what genetic counselling is, but I think the way I view the role is about, it's very much about helping patients to understand their family histories, understand how their genetics might be influencing their condition or their presentation, and helping them to consider that and come up with informed decisions in terms of their management and their testing around their condition. I think that's how I'd describe it.
It sounds, even from the title, it sounds like quite a mix between you've got the counselling and then you've got the science of genetics and genomics. How did you get into this role? Was it something that you knew about? Did you follow the sort of counselling side of it, or was it following the science side of it? How did you get to where you are?
Yeah, so I think, even the job title itself, I think, is quite misleading. So traditional counselling setting, it would be all patient focused, and the patient would kind of determine which direction that session went in. Whereas with genetic counselling, often there's a lot more education. So often the genetic counsellor themselves will come to that session with certain information that they need to impart upon that patient, so they bring more to the session than a counsellor in a traditional setting would do. So that's why it's slightly confusing with the counselling term in there. But you're absolutely right, it is a real mixture of science and also those kind of softer counselling skills, and that very much is what attracted me to the role. So I'd always loved science at school. It was my favourite subject. It was definitely by far the best, the thing that I was best at. But I didn't want to be a doctor and I didn't want to be a dentist. And my careers advisor, I think, despaired at me a bit when the amount of options that I had after my questionnaire, there was too many apparently, because I hadn't been specific enough. But I just knew I wanted to use science and I wanted to work with people. So I went off to university initially to do a biomedical science degree, and then shortly changed to doing a genetics degree, which at school wasn't even told that you could do a degree in genetics. It was only when I got to university that I realised you could, and I just absolutely loved it. So the time when I was doing this was kind of over 20 years ago now. And so it was at the time where the Human Genome Project was being run, where they were sequencing the first human genome. And so it was a really exciting time to be doing my degree. And I just absolutely loved learning about, right down to the smallest detail of the reactions that go on to make us exist and our bodies function. So I absolutely loved it. And in my first year at uni, we had a lecturer from a genetic counsellor. And even as she said what her job title was, I turned to my friend and I just said, I want to do that job. And I did. I just knew instantly. I was like, that's exactly the kind of thing that I want to be doing, is using the science that I love so much, but helping people to understand it and applying it in a healthcare setting where you can support people through their healthcare journeys with this extra bit of science.
I guess with such a broad subject of genetics and genomics, there must be so many different cases that you see. And is there things that you specialize in, or is it the broad range of things that you like handling on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So obviously, genetics or genomics can be applied in so many different healthcare settings that there's a vast array of elements that as genetic counsellors we can cover. Traditionally, the field, genetic counselling is very broadly broken into kind of cancer specialisms and general specialisms. Some genetic counsellors and some departments are arranged different, you know, all genetic clinical genetics departments where traditionally genetic counsellors sit are arranged slightly differently. But in certainly in the Northern Genetics Service where I work, we cover a mixture of cases. So, and I quite like that element of being able to cover both cancer and general work, because I feel like it keeps me fresh and keeps me on my toes a little bit and stops me getting into too much of a repetitive pattern with the same types of conditions. But there is also the opportunity to specialise in conditions as well.
So with such a wide variety of sort of conditions that you encounter and that you help people through, I know from my personal experience, as I was diagnosed with a genetic heart condition when I was 16 called hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, and then through my journey along that interacted with genetic counsellors, which that was my first time ever hearing about that role. It must be tricky going from one thing to the next when you've got someone like me diagnosed at 16. It's sort of a bit of a surprise for me, and sort of counselling them, and then also having people who may have had a condition picked up much younger or with a family history. Is it difficult to sort of deal with all of these different possibilities on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I mean, I guess as broad as the conditions can be, so can the settings of each family, which is, I guess, what makes the job so interesting, that no two cases are alike. So you're absolutely right. We see people, I always think of it that we see all people at all stages of their life cycle. So we might see people in pregnancy where there's maybe been something picked up on scan that has revealed either a genetic diagnosis or has brought to light, you know, up until that point, they haven't mentioned that there's family history. So they then might need to link in with us. And as genetic counsellors, we get quite heavily involved in kind of supporting families in pregnancy. If they're kind of thinking of having testing, we kind of are involved in helping coordinate that and returning results right the way through to children. So there are some genetic conditions where you would test in childhood, very few, because wherever possible, we try not to test in children. But where there are conditions that, you know, could potentially have, you know, side effects by the age of, say, 12, then we could potentially discuss, you know, we're open to discussions with family and taking them carefully through testing. Like say your scenario where you see people as teenagers and seeing people as teenagers for maybe carrier testing for kind of genetic conditions before, you know, any pregnancies happen. That's often the best time to do carrier testing. And then into adults helping, you know, couples who maybe do know that they carry a genetic condition between them, helping them to make informed decisions about how they want to plan a family. And then within adulthood, you know, kind of organising screening for, you know, so genetic counsellors are very active in organising breast care screening and bowel screening in families where there's, you know, either a proven, predisposition or, you know, there's a high risk looking family where they meet the criteria. So it's a really varied role. And I think for me personally, I do a lot of prep for my clinic. So I always like to prep them at least a week in advance. So I'll get the notes and have a look through them, understand what I think the patient, you know, have a think about what I think the patient's agenda is. Although that's always my first question when I see somebody, is what they understand about being there, so that I make sure that absolutely it's their agenda that we do follow. And so, you know, I quite enjoy the variety that comes with, you know, speaking with people from different conditions and different aspects. Again, I think it keeps me fresh and keeps me, you know, over the years has made me a more experienced genetic counsellor. And so, you know, ultimately, hopefully makes me better at my job. It can be a heavy job to do, you know, where genomics at its best can be fantastic. And, you know, you can be reassuring and you can help clarify. But there's also, you know, there's very few black and white scenarios in genetics. It's very often the grey that we're dealing with, and that can be very tough for families to deal with. And so in turn can be difficult when, as a healthcare professional, you can't give people the certainty that they want. We do have a lot of support, so we're really fortunate as a profession that part of our professional registration is that we should access formal supervision, which in the Northern Genetic Service, we're really lucky to do that once a month. So we have a group session once a month with a psychologist who, you know, does exploring work with us, and we have chance to do reflection on, you know, things that we've maybe found difficult over time. So we're really fortunate. And I think just with experience, you learn to leave the job, when you put your pen down on your desk, but you learn to distinguish it a little bit from home life and work life. So I think over the years I've got better at that. But yeah, there certainly can be very heavy days.
Yeah, I was going to ask about if there's any sort of supervision of, you know, you're delivering potentially very difficult news to people. You know, I'm sure you deliver good news as well, but you know, the difficult news and dealing with people who are maybe going through very difficult times, to be able to have that outlet for you as well is very important, I'm sure. When you're dealing with the families, there must also be, well, I don't know, are there, you know, if you're dealing with a family where maybe the person who like for me, I was diagnosed and then my family was sort of tested as well. Are there sort of moments where you're more working with the extended family rather than the sort of actual person who's been diagnosed themselves?
Yeah, I mean, initially it's usually the person that's been diagnosed themselves. So I'm thinking maybe more around a kind of cancer family history. So where a diagnosis has been made, and as more and more mainstream testing comes in, as a genetic counsellor, we are being given those results. So whereas traditionally we would have maybe taken a patient through that testing on the basis of their family history, now when diagnoses are made in mainstream, if they meet the criteria, they can be tested within that mainstream pathway. So they might not see a genetic counsellor until after they've had their initial genetic test and have a diagnosis, because, you know, in the example of, you know, a breast cancer case, there's only about 5 to 10% of people that will actually carry an underlying inherited tendency predisposition. So you have 90 to 95% of people that are tested that don't actually have anything. So the vast majority of people can be tested and reassured within mainstream medicine. But for those 5 to 10% of people, they're coming in, and often they've had some conversations around what their results mean, but they may have been tested to help inform their treatment. So they might not necessarily have fully explored the impact of actually what this might mean on the wider family. Now, within clinical genetics, we would always start with the first person who has been diagnosed, and we would offer to see them. I guess there might be scenarios where they decline that, but are happy for their relatives to still be tested. So, you know, the main reason really of seeing that person initially is, again, to explore, you know, how they're doing with this result and how they're coping with adjusting to the fact that, unlike other areas of medicine where results generally impact the person that's being tested, the difference about genomics is a little bit like a drop in a pond. You have the ripples that then impact out. And in my experience, I think for the vast majority of people where they find a result, actually, although it can be upsetting for them, the biggest impact and the most upsetting impact is the fact that particularly their children are possibly then facing a history where they might be at risk of also developing maybe similar cancer. So that can be quite difficult. But so generally speaking, we always start with that kind of almost the drop in the pond. So that first person who's had the diagnosis, we would meet with them and, as I say, explore how, you know, how they were doing with the result. and help to support them through that. Often there's people might have a lot of feelings of guilt and blame, and they need to help kind of working through that. And I think that's one of the areas where genetic counsellors do have a specialist role. From there, we also then obviously using the tools of taking a family history and exploring with them, you know, if they've told their relatives and if they're intending to. Very often people can be so nervous about doing so that they haven't. It's not that they don't want to. It's just that they're struggling to find the words and the ways to do it. So again, genetic counsellors would support them in that process and help them structure how they might do that. For some people, they don't want to be involved at all. So we can write to GPs anonymously, you know, kind of not identifying the patient. And so we can help. So we can work with, you know, going back to your question about the extended family. We do, but we always start really from the middle. We never write to anybody out of the blue, because ethically we don't feel as a profession that that would be the right thing to do, because some people don't want to know. So generally speaking, it would be where we are directly working with those extended families. It would be writing to a GP, advising the GP there's a family history, and asking them to advise their patient of that and ask if they want to be referred to find out more, so that they've then got the choice of whether they want to kind of open that door to explore what their options would be.
So would you ever be in a situation where sort of you're dealing with one member of the family who's been diagnosed? Is it ever where they might ask you to tell another family member on their behalf? Is that something that you would do?
Yeah, so we would, but we'd do it via the GP. So we would ask the patient to provide their patient's their relative's details, and we would write a letter to the GP, explain there's been a family history of this, and we, you know, we could name people if they, you know, their brother has been diagnosed with this, or if they don't want to be named specifically, we can just say that within the wider family, this diagnosis has been made, and therefore there may be a risk to this patient, and if they'd like to come to the genetic service to discuss their risks and their options for testing and management, then please, you know, refer them in.
Yeah, thinking about that, and in a sort of similar vein, do you ever have situations where you're speaking to someone and they're not really sort of engaging with the counselling kind of process? I mean, does it feel difficult as though you want to give them sort of more information and more, you sort of people not asking questions? Maybe it must be a little bit tricky when, if someone's not very sort of engaged with the process, do you ever feel like you want to just give them that, you know, as much counselling and information as possible?
Yeah, well, I think the cases where that do prey on my mind are where you maybe see a patient and they advise you that their relatives have said, you know, oh no, they don't want testing. They're not going to bother with that. But it's not truly an informed decision. So I always say to people, you know, it makes little difference to me whether people decide to have testing or not. But I prefer that to be an informed decision. So I always say that when people come in, it's entirely their choice. But I will give them all the options of what's available to them and help. I see that as my job, as trying to help people make a decision that will sit comfortably with them in the short and the long term. It can often get very tricky to negotiate where you have children in that aspect. So say, for example, you're seeing someone whose sister has declined to have testing, but she has children. Her children wouldn't be able to necessarily access testing without their parent being tested, because testing for the children might reveal the adult's result. So wherever possible, we try and do a top-down approach, because otherwise you can end up revealing people's results who don't want them.
So is there quite a mixture of, you know, when you're dealing with sort of multiple sort of generations and things, is there quite a mixture between quite sort of long-term sort of relationships in a way between, you know, patients and yourself, and then also quite short-term ones as well. And I guess especially depending on what sort of treatment might be available, if at all, for various conditions, as to, you know, someone might come in and you give them, you know, they have a session where they learn about it and then sort of, you know, that might be it, or you might have multiple generations and multiple sort of long relationships.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess that's where, again, it's a very varied role, that exactly as you describe, you know, we see people for some, you know, predictive testing, and, you know, if they're negative, then, you know, they go off into the sunset and they never, you know, never needed to be seen again. Similarly, they can be positive and you refer them into mainstream for their management. But then you have other scenarios where you might see multiple members of the same family. They might come to each other's sessions. And so you get to know them. And often you can be going through, you can be on that patient's journey at a very difficult time for them. So particularly now that diagnostic, you know, kind of testing in mainstream means that often patients are, you know, particularly on a cancer journey, might be right in the middle of a new diagnosis, right in the middle of their treatment. And then on top of that, they've then got to deal with this explosive result that is exposing that this was the cause, and is linking their diagnosis in with maybe a family history that they've always known about, but, you know, has never quite been clear enough as to what was going on, and then shining the spotlight on others in the family. And that can be very, very difficult when people are, you know, right in the thickness of their treatment. And for some patients, you know, where you are working with families, one thing that I do feel really fortunate about in my role is that we don't always, but we do have the option of doing follow-up work with patients. So if people need a second appointment, the vast majority don't, but there are scenarios where, you know, the appointment time that you've got just isn't enough to fill, you know, or there is too much to fill, I should say. For others, there might be ongoing issues that might arise at a later date. Then you do end up developing those relations where you do see them on multiple occasions, and then you see them at different times in their lives. So you'll see them where, you know, maybe a new diagnosis has been made and you're advising about family planning options, and you'll see them a few years later for family planning, and then you'll see them a few years later, you know, for you know, their next pregnancy. And so you do develop that rapport, which is one of the, you know, one of the really lovely things about the job.
So going back to your route into this role, and the sort of luckily coming across a genetic counsellor earlier in your education, if it weren't for that, how would someone even find out about a genetic counsellor role existing, or how would they get into that?
Certainly when I, as I said, when I did my degree, I graduated in 2001, I think, you know, genetic counselling as a profession was only really just finding its feet. I think today, you know, with more genetics being included on undergraduate courses, I think most touch on an element of genetic counselling. I believe now it's also included in the GCSE and the A-level syllabus about inherited conditions. So you would hope that people had come across, you know, at least it in name, even if they hadn't remembered it in detail. My routine was that I did a master's degree. So 20 years ago, that was the main routine for people with a scientific background. You could also come into it from a nursing background, but there were slightly different training routes for that. Nowadays, there still is some master's programs available. However, I would say the bulk of people coming through as genetic counsellors come through the scientific training program route, which is a funded route. So it's a 3-year training program, but it's a paid for route. It's very competitive, so it's very difficult to get onto, but they really are fabulous training courses. And I'm quite jealous of the ones that are training now, because their training is just amazing. You know, so the genetic counselling arm of the STP program spend time in lots of different disciplines, including, you know, know, kind of in the labs and really understanding those kind of testing processes, which obviously are then an absolutely great grounding to then delivering a clinical service, which links so closely with the labs.
I mean, the role itself is a massively important role, and I feel the same from my personal experience. The genetic counsellor that helped me and my family had such a massive impact, and it's such an important role. Do you see it changing, or how would you see it evolving, because it is so necessary? How will the role evolve, especially as you know, if there's more testing becomes more mainstream, what will happen to the role?
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's great to hear you obviously have had such a positive experience, and to hear your views about how special and important the role is. I think genetic counselling involves so many different elements. I think it's often easy for mainstream clinicians to think that they are, you know, to paraphrase, doing the genetic counselling, when in fact what they're doing is having an informed consent conversation or doing some element of the genetic counselling. But actually, genetic counselling is a sum of many parts. And I think that as a profession, we need to take care in the next few years to make sure that our voice is heard and to make sure that our profession is recognised for the special role that it is. I think that that informed consent discussion is a really careful one that needs to be had. And with mainstreaming, I think that's one of my personal reservations, is making sure, you know, I don't doubt that it is, a lot of testing is very well placed in mainstream. I think it's right. I think it puts, you know, it's better for the patient. And I think it puts, you know, the testing in the hands of the people that are expert in managing these conditions. Because as genetic counsellors, we don't necessarily specialise specifically in these. You know, so for example, with your condition with hypertrophic cardiomyopathy, is it not right that testing should sit with, you know, a cardiac specialist nurse that is working with families with HCM? And I think, you know, I don't doubt that that's the right place for it. I maybe have a little concerns at the time that is given to that discussion, because in mainstream medicine, they might not have the luxury of the kind of longer appointments that we can have within genetics to explore that with them. So, but I think that's, you know, I think that's where part of my workforce development and education role comes from, is making sure that we do support the workforce so that they're able to effectively do that. But I think in terms of the genetic counselling role itself, I think it will more and more become a role that is involved in that cascade testing throughout families, so that, you know, as more diagnoses are picked up because more testing is available in mainstream, it will mean that as genetic counsellors, you know, probably the bulk of our work will be that predictive testing and that helping families to adjust to the results that they've got, and spending time with families to explore, you know, their journeys that they're on, and helping them to adjust to those results themselves, and also help them with that transition of kind of sharing that result to their rest of the family and cascading it, and then in turn obviously managing families and what have you. So I think it would be easy in some ways to break the role up and not have it exist, but I think, as you've described, it is a really specialist role that, you know, when it's in the right place, can be hugely beneficial for patients. And I think it's really important that we, you know, we make sure that we protect those skills and protect that role and ensure that it fits within the kind of the wider picture of mainstreaming.
So as your role, genetic counsellor, do you find that there are a lot of misconceptions, or people don't quite understand what the role entails going in? You know, it would be easy to assume it is just, you know, it's counselling, or, you know, you're going to be helping people through things in a certain way. Is there a lot of that to deal with in the role?
Yeah, I think I would say the two most common misconceptions that I get in clinics is, the first is that people might come in and say that they don't want counselling, to which I usually respond, good, because I'm not a counsellor, so we're on the right page. And the second one is around testing, is that people assume that because they are coming, they have to have testing. So I would say those are the two main misconceptions that people have. And often with the latter, or with both, really. It can be off-putting for relatives to come. So it's, I often say that it, you know, it's not the people that come and decline testing that make me not sleep at night. It's the people that don't come in for that conversation at all, because I worry that they, you know, the perception of the role is different to the reality of it. And, you know, that actually with an informed decision, you know, they might choose something differently, or alternatively might sit with their decision more comfortably.
So is there, would you say you could pick one particular aspect of the role that you take most satisfaction in?
So I think the bit where I mostly feel like, you know, when I have a positive impact is when families, you know, come in maybe not understanding their risk and their risk in the context of their family history. And I think I probably take most satisfaction when people gain an understanding of it and are then able to live with that more easily. So maybe a couple of examples, you know, someone who maybe is coming in adamant that they have to have testing. And actually when you have a conversation with them and explore, you know, their motivations for wanting the test and what the impact would be of that result, then they might change their mind. And I think it's often, you know, when you help to people to see more clearly that you get more satisfaction.
So through the role, you're delivering news to people, good and bad. What would be an example of you delivering very difficult news?
Yeah, so there's one case that sticks out for me, and it was where I had to give a negative result to a family. So where we'd done genetic testing and hadn't been able to find anything. It was a session where lots of family members came along. There's a big family history. They were desperate for an answer of what was causing it. And I had to tell them that it was negative, that we hadn't found anything. And it was a really challenging session. It was, you know, really difficult because this family were desperate for certainty. They were desperate for advice for unaffected people in the family so that they could gauge their screening. So it was a real challenge to deliver a negative result. Sometimes I think people feel like the positive results where things are confirmed can be difficult. And, you know, there's of course, there are elements where that is very true. But often getting a result can bring with it certainty, and it can give clarity, and it can give options to patients in the family, you know, to relatives in the family to learn whether they have or haven't got this. Whereas with a negative result family, that can be challenging. For some, it's great news. But in this one particular case, it was really tough because I wanted to be able to give them answers and I couldn't. So those difficult cases often don't pop up in the places where you think they're going to be. Like often it can be the families where their perception of risk is completely out of line with what we're advising. And you feel for families that have lived a family history that they might have lost a parent young, but we're saying, yeah, you're low or moderate risk, but to them, they feel a very high risk. And so actually the challenge of the job is helping them to understand, you know, the science behind our risk assessments and behind our decisions to test or not to test. And I think that's where the major challenge can come from the role.
Well, thank you very much, Helen, for giving me the opportunity to ask you questions, and especially questions with my patient hat on. I really appreciate it.
That's okay. It's been absolutely lovely talking to you, and you can probably tell how passionate I am about genetic counselling, so you always love an opportunity to talk about it. And thanks very much for you at home listening. If you'd like to learn more about genetic counselling, then you can go to the podcast section of our website and follow the links for more information. Our website is www.ney-genomics.org.uk/podcast.